You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Fast forward, you know, a little bit more successful, a little bit stronger, more people. They're like, let's get back into music a little bit, right? But Ash, CEO, had the idea of starting a label to help support indie artists and get them, like, you know, expose them to the audience of Watch Mojo, which is 24 million subscribers, 150 million views per month, all that stuff, all that crazy stuff. So that's great. When I heard that, I was like, man, where do I sign? You know, like, where do I, how do I, you know, get me in this thing, you know? And like within 30 seconds of us getting on the phone, first time I've ever spoken to him, we were talking about Ozzy Osbourne, you know, within like 30 seconds, you know, like, and all that stuff. So right off the bat, you know, like, okay, we're dealing with someone who loves music and is for music and to help.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians, talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. I hope you've been having a glorious week. I most certainly have been, because we are now officially 1 month away from Heavy Montreal Presents Vox and Hops Brutal Montreal. That's right, a true metal and craft beer festival happening right here in Montreal on December 17th at Corona Theater, featuring my band Cryptopsy, The Agonist, The Great Sabatini, Necrotic Mutation, and Burning the Oppressor. All night long, you can enjoy killer brews from BG, Brasserie Urbaine, Missorum Brassatorium, Brasserie du Beau Canada, Sir John Brewing Company, Cinquième Baron, and Brasserie de Montréal. Tickets are selling extremely quickly for this event, so if you are planning on coming to it, you should absolutely pick up your tickets via the link in the description of this podcast. Don't miss your chance. It's going to be an absolute blast. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I would just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I'm also asking you to tell a friend about the podcast. If there's someone in your life, doesn't have to be a metalhead, doesn't have to be a huge hophead, but if there's someone in your life that enjoys listening to podcasts, let them know that the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast exists. You could tell them that there are over 300 episodes for them to go explore on their favorite podcast platform. If you were to encourage one of your friends to become a brand new Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly, truly appreciate. Now, on today's episode, I'm with Frank Pavon, Cassius Morris, and Joe Pacheco of the Inner Sleeve podcast of Sound Mojo. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 309.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I'm with the boys from the Inner Sleeve podcast from Sound Mojo. We got Frank Pavon, Cassius Morris, and Joe Pacheco. Boys, how are you guys doing?
Doing great, man.
Matt, thanks for having us, man.
No, I had to. It was just, I was watching, you know, I grew up watching the lists, the Watch Mojo lists, and then here it pops up on my socials. What's this? It's the same. It feels the same. It looks the same. Sound Mojo. They have a podcast. I have a podcast, and it was cool that we hooked this up. So let's start with a very simple. How are you guys doing tonight? How are you feeling? We're about to drink a beer together. We're going to talk about metal. You guys are going to ask me some questions. Let's just jump right in.
Awesome. I'm doing great, man. Just glad to be here finally, because like same as you, like I've seen Vox and Hops, and then I'm like, okay, we started the Inner Sleeve, we're like, okay, let's see what happens, and then eventually you're like, oh, okay, and then you just hit us up and we're like, oh, let's do this together, man. Do a nice crossover.
I love it. I like to start these off with a shitty question to move into brighter territory as we keep going throughout the conversation. How did you guys cope with the glorious year of 2020 that has now lingered into 2021? And, you know, we're almost at the end of 2021, but it sort of still feels a little bit like 2020, but a little bit better. So how did you guys cope with all that time?
I don't know. Yeah, it's weird, eh? Because you get that vibe of like, it feels long, but yet it's like, wow, it's a blur, it just passed, you know, like, and we live the day by day, you know? So I don't know. It's hard to just process it, basically, day by day. It was a bit rough last year. No shows, no events. And we were just getting started with Sound Mojo to like, all right, let's go cover some events, do some shows. And like, no. Like, right out of the gate, we just get blocked, you know?
Yeah, it was a pretty hectic year. I mean, for me personally, this gig is actually what mostly got me through 2020. Like, it started, I think, in the holiday season right before it. And honestly, just being able to talk to people from all around the world, such as yourself, Matt, and all the other people we've talked to, that's really what personally kept me going, because it was that connection that we didn't have in the quarantine. Mm-hmm,
absolutely. How about you, Frank?
You know what? You know what's funny is that this morning I got on a call with like our CEO, WatchMojo. We get onto like weekly calls just to catch up, see how things are going. And the first thing he asked me was, did this year, like he said, I can't believe it's already October. Did this year pass fast for you or was it slow? And I honestly, I think it just passed so incredibly quickly. I can't believe we're already in October. And I know some people will say, oh my God, no, I've been cooped up in my house or whatever the situation is. But for me, it really just passed so fast. And I can't believe we're already October, nearing 2022 already. I really can't.
It's unbelievable. It's especially running a podcast. It's like living week to week.
Yeah.
How about yourself?
Oh, I've been busy as goddamn hell. I've been working full time the whole time at my day job, working as an early childhood educator. And the podcast has just been running the whole time, going from during the pandemic at the peak of the pandemic when I was home. I was releasing 3 episodes a week, and then I cut down to 2 episodes a week. And now recently I've cut down to 1 episode a week, but I tend to still drop 2 episodes a week because that just sort of happens.
And if people don't realize, 1 a week is a lot. So like 3 a week is insane.
I've been like looking at how much time actually goes in from A to Z, from that first email, reaching out to try to book an interview, to the final social media post, let's say. And it's about 7 to 10 hours per episode that it takes for a Vox and Hops episode. So
yes,
it's time consuming.
it's very like time. It's sometimes I beat myself up for like, oh my God, am I taking too long to do this? You know, why is it taking so long? It's
we develop tricks.
Yeah, that's
keep
it.
Going,
you know, it's like building the plane as you fly it. You know,
Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, typically talking about their life, music, and craft beer. Now, what beers are we going to be sharing virtually tonight?
Joe, go ahead and start.
Let's see. I've got 2, but I'm going to show 1. I'm not like a big beer drinker, more of a coffee guy, but I like beer, you know? Mm. And I know that Vox and Hops is all about that. So I figured, let me just try this Cherry Bomb. You know, you're the pro, so I don't even know what this is. I think it's cherry. It's beer.
What is the brewery, though?
Let's see if my old eyes can see this. Brewery is La Souche, microbrasserie.
That's correct. Yes, very, very cool brewery from out there in Quebec, in the woods of Quebec. They make killer beers. Who else wants to go next? What else are we sharing?
I feel like a kid in class who forgot his homework because I actually don't have a beer on me at the moment. Ever since my little mishap head injury, beer hasn't really been in my vocabulary. Mm-hmm. But I did want to give a shout out to one of my favorite micro breweries, or at least craft. You tell me if they're micro or not, but Alley Cat Brewers.
Okay.
Very, very
located?
Good brewery. They're in Alberta.
Okay. I do not know them.
Well, just for the record, Cassius is from Alberta. That's why it's local.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. The only reason I've heard of them. No, but very good brand and big shout out to them.
Amazing. How about you, Frank?
So for myself, so funny story is that last week, Joe and I, we were at the studio at the WatchMojo headquarters, and we said, you know, after we had finished, we said, let's go to this little craft or microbrewery Depener convenience store. And so Joe was right. We did buy the same Cherry Bomb, which it was a 50-50 shot, Joe, on which one I would open. And I did open the Cherry Bomb one. So we'll show that one again.
I didn't open it.
You didn't open it? But then I've got this other cool one here. And while I was shopping, I didn't realize that I had purchased 2 beers that were kind of similar. But the artwork captivated me. So it's milkshake brown ale cherry flavor.
Wow. From Lenolton.
Look at
Ship
you.
Ship it over to Cash's.
And it's Lenolton company.
Yeah, hey, just throw it over.
Yeah, so I mean, while I did open the Cherry Bomb, I have that other one on my desk here. So I'll be trying that one at least maybe later on in the week. But that's what I got.
Amazing.
And Matt, I saw in one of your latest episodes you were telling the guest that somebody was drinking a bubbly sparkling water, mm-hmm. so that redeemed mm-hmm. him. So now you can tell the next guest somebody was drinking air. So there's no way it can get any worse than this. So there
it's
you guys
definitely
go.
Not the first time. There's no stress, Cassius. On my side, I'm going to be drinking one of my brand new favorite breweries. This is from Saikambato. One of the nice. I feel like they're very underestimated. They can do everything right. This is their mixtape, and they do a series That's of mixtapes. Cool. It's a New England IPA, and they just changed the color of the mixtape. Cool. So they're really into hip hop and stuff like that, which is not metal, but I love them so darn much that I don't mind promoting them. And Jacob, their owner, is really cool. And this is 6.5% New England IPA, just killer. I'm going to crack this, and I would love to hear about your guys' first beers.
First oh, beer? Wow. I'm old, bro. I don't can remember my first beer.
Oh, man. I have a...
Mine was last week. I'm the young guy
I have
here.
A funny no. story. I think... It must have been in high school. So in high school, I was probably 14, 15. A couple buddies and I, we had got together at a friend's house. And it was Pabst.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Blue Ribbon, which is just like, that teaches you. That teaches you a lesson. That
That's
one.
A first beer.
That one teaches you a lesson from a young age. And so it was that one. And I remember that night, like we for some stupid reason, young kids, we didn't make logical decisions, and my friend's parents were out that night, and we decided not to throw the beer cans that we had consumed just in their recycling bin. We had decided to throw them out somewhere, and minors walking around with like a garbage bag with looking very suspicious, a police car strolls by, and they ask us, "What are you holding and why are you doing this?" And so we got a little scared there. They were nice people, so they let us walk on our way, but it was a very silly decision, and that's a fun, like a funny memory I had from a young age. So that was it. Yeah, Pabst, that was the answer question.
Yeah. Joe, do you remember
no.
that first beer?
No, I remember probably very young because I did not like it at all. Like I didn't like, I'm not an alcohol guy. I had to like, you know, like where you sort of force yourself and then you end up liking it. So I remember getting old, like, you know, in my 20s, I still like, you know, I'd have that one beer all night at the show, like the one beer, right? And it gets hot and it's disgusting. So it makes it even worse.
It's getting worse and
exactly.
worse.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like, why do people do this? I'd be like,
it's
why
cheaper,
do people do this? And then, you know, you go out Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you know, a couple months later, next thing you know, like, wow, this is my fourth, fifth beer in like an hour or so. Like, what's going on over here? So that's pretty much my story.
That's hilarious. I think for me, I had tried a little sip. Like, I think most parents would maybe give you a little sip when you're 13 on mm-hmm. New Year's or whatever. But the first beer I actually sat and had was at a party a friend of mine was having in the East Coast. And he was so excited that he had Budweiser. He was like, "We have the king of beers. This is the best beer because it says it on the can." And I was like, "Wow, this is the real deal." So yeah, I remember having that and sort of choking it down and trying to be one of the boys that night. So it was pretty funny.
That's
Matt,
amazing.
Yourself?
Well, I've spoken about it a lot on my pod. My first beer was a Lucky Lager. It doesn't exist anymore. I was at a house party in high school. We ravaged my poor friend's house because his mother was out of town and she was a very sweet woman and we shouldn't have done that. But it was lots and lots of fun. And I, you know, if I could teleport myself back there and relive it again, I would most definitely do that. Yep. Cheers for hanging out.
Cheers.
Raise your glass of air.
cheers.
This is great. This is a super fruity, juicy, like, tropical fruits, not bitter whatsoever. Really awesome, amazing second bottle.
Cool, man. This is cool too. Like I was expecting more cherry, and it's not. You know, it's more.
It's like beer. It's like a red yeah. red ale.
Yeah, I like it.
Amazing. Let's dance into music. I'd love to hear about the soundtrack of your youth when you're growing up. When you're growing up in your parents' or guardians' house, what music was playing when you were not in control of the music? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
Well, that's a good one. Growing up Portuguese downtown Montreal in the plateau before it was the plateau, I was exposed mm-hmm. to Portuguese folklore, fado, you know, as they call it, and like. And also like marching band, you know, I even played very young. I played the clarinet and French horn in like Portuguese, like marching band where we would do like the feasts down around the church over there. That's pretty much, you know, before I got into control of things.
Frank.
I've got I don't know, growing up in my, because my grandparents, I'm very lucky to still live next door to my grandparents, and I've been doing so for a while. And my grandfather is just crazy for music. I mean, music was his career. He was an accordionist. He had his own orchestra as well, or band, I should say. And he predominantly operated in the wedding scene in Montreal. That's what he was most known for. And anyways, when I was, a young kid, I was always over at their house, and there was a lot of more classical, I guess, music playing. Like, there was always the Rat Pack. There was always Louis Armstrong. There was the Four Aces. I don't know if you... Right?
No.
Yeah, I think they were more of a local band. But anyways, my grandfather had a bunch of music playing all the time. So I guess you could say I grew up on older style music. And yeah, that's a little brief summary of my end as well. Cassius, how about you?
This is great, Matt, because you're letting me get to know my coworkers here better. This is stuff I didn't know at all. This is
we're
great.
More like just,
you know,
get to
me,
work. Was, like,
yeah, that's what we are.
What
we're like literally.
Yeah, exactly. We're whipping each other.
Well, it's a magic question. I ask it for a reason, because you can find out something about your guests when they were young, which brings out a vulnerability.
Right.
And also, you can find out what their youth was like. Did they grow up in a broken home? That was it their brother that showed them more stuff because their dad was always out drinking. You know, like, it's like a secret key lock into memories that really opens up. And there's a reason why I ask specific questions, and that one is definitely why. Cassius.
Well, don't steal my answer, because that was my answer. No. But actually, you know, it was so eclectic growing up in my household. We would always have music, especially in the car, no matter where we would go. Anything from gospel to Warren Zevon to Marvin Gaye to Kiss, Iron Maiden. It was always just playing. And I remember my dad would play, he would even play like Eminem albums and stuff and hip hop albums. But whenever they had cuss words, he would turn it down and then he'd turn it back up.
He had
so
them
like,
memorized.
It was like his own bleeps. Yeah, pretty much.
Instead
he
of the
it.
DJ,
so I was exposed to a lot.
Blurring out the swear words, it was just your dad.
Yeah, my dad had a turntable in the front seat, the whole deal. It was amazing.
Sounds safe.
Yeah.
Amazing. Let's dance straight into this Sound Mojo. Now, why?
Why?
Did Watch Mojo feel like it needed a label, something else, a sister channel, a brother channel, a second venture? What, you know, at what point did they realize that there was no more content for them to remake into top 10 lists?
Well, it's... I know that Watch Mojo like always covered music, top 10 whatever, but they always got like, it always gave them the most pain, right, with the labels claiming copyright claims and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Hell
so
yes.
So when they realized
that in sports,
yeah, tough and ones. They realized like, well, it's 95% of our hassle is music related claims that, you know, we have to figure out and, you know, whatever, but it was like very 5% of what the revenue generated actual views, and, you know, so it wasn't worth it for them. So they basically put a stop on it, and, you know, what they grew, what they became known as as Watch Mojo for pop culture. So then fast forward, you know, a little bit more successful, a little bit stronger, more people. They're like, let's get back into music a little bit, right? But Ash, CEO, had the idea of starting a label to help support indie artists. And get them, like, you know, expose them to the audience of Watch Mojo, which is 24 million subscribers, 150 million views per month, all that stuff, all that crazy stuff. So that's great. When I heard that, I was like, man, where do I sign? You know, like, get me in this thing, you know? And like within 30 seconds of us getting on the phone, first time I've ever spoken to him, we were talking about Ozzy Osbourne, you know, within like 30 seconds, you know, like, and all that stuff. So right off the bat, you know, like, okay, we're dealing with someone who loves music and is for music and to help, you know, because like they're not, you know, like at this point they're, you know, putting all these resources into this and not asking, we're not charging bands or anything. It's just like, let's build the channel, Sound Mojo, build a brand. And also at the same time, I hate to use the exposure word, but in this case, it actually is exposure, because you are being exposed to, like, you know, videos where it's 200,000, 300,000, 700,000 views, right? And you have a little 20-second spot in there, you know?
Ah, yes. That's really cool. Yeah. And then they don't have to pay the rights for it because they own the rights to it.
Well, actually, we cut a really artist-friendly deal. Like, when I got there, it was like clean slate, you know? So I put together the idea of, like, artists don't need a label anymore at this point. They need money, right? Or they need help like I said, exposure and all that, but... I said, let's put something together where, like, they give us license to monetize it on Sound Mojo, and whatever comes in from that, we split 50-50 with them. It's non-exclusive, so they can take that same video and put it on other promo websites or whatever on their own YouTube channels. For us, it's non-exclusive, so it's, I think it's really cool. It's like an artist-friendly deal. Coming from an artist background myself, it's like, you know, it's like you don't really lose, you actually gain. And if you think about it, you're that, once you're in that video, it's like it being in a movie. It's for perpetuity. You're always going to be promoted constantly, you know, as long as that, if that video is evergreen, it's always going to be promoting
absolutely
the song, you know?
Absolutely.
So it's, I found it was a really cool, unique way to sort of like, you know, help out, build a brand and also get WatchMojo back into music and also help indie artists, because I mean, nobody, you know, Beyonce's and all that, they don't need the help at all. So who needs the help is, you know, guys like us, you know, where we have these, you know, it's super talented musicians, artists and bands, and now you have a real audience to you know, that can listen to your stuff and then like discover you, basically.
I think it's super interesting too, because I know that WatchMojo beginnings, they would go and actually do interviews at shows here in Montreal, and then SoundMojo was going to basically pick up where that left off.
Yeah, right? and then the pandemic hits. Nice big spoke in the wheels, you know.
But yet a podcast was born out of it.
Yeah, the podcast, well, that's Frank. I shall let Frank go, because that's pretty much, Frank came in to establish the WatchMojo podcast network.
Right. So going back around, I guess, a year and a half ago, I emailed out of the blue. I wasn't part of the company. And I emailed the CEO out of the blue just because he had put out a tweet. He's like, hey, you know what? If you're interested in something, find my email out there in the internet, on the internet, and email me. So I did that, gave him a bit of my background. At first, I really didn't go to him specifically for, hey, I think you should maybe consider doing podcasts. It was more of I was brought on as an intern role, doing a bit of support work for him and what he needed. And it kind of branched out into, hey, why don't you just, I mean, start from scratch. Take our graphic designers, get creative, build some logos, gather some talent, aka Cassius and others, of course, but Cassius for this podcast, this recording, and have fun with it. And we felt like SoundMojo definitely, when you look at the family tree of WatchMojo and you look at all the channels, so you have Miss Mojo, Mojo Espanol, WatchMojo UK, all that, they follow the same content strategy arc as the main channel, right? Which is top 10s, top 20s, whatever the case may be. SoundMojo doesn't. And so we said a nice complimentary feature to the channel would be to show off a bit more of our internal voice and start a weekly show. And that's kind of how we ran with it. And we kind of thankfully stumbled upon Cassius's email, pursued that a little bit, and boom.
Excellent. Let's let Cassius take up at that moment. So you sit down at your computer, you open your phone, I imagine, really, and there's an email sitting there. What was your mindset? Because I got a lot of emails. Sometimes I'm like, what the fuck is this? This is... what does this person want?
Frank's
what
mindset?
What does this person want from me?
Is this our email to Cassius or Cassius is to ours?
Because he reached out to you. Is that... or
at first, yeah.
Oh, okay. But, and then when they responded, so you pick up the story there.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, I originally saw the posting on the WatchMojo community tab, and it was just really spoke to me. I mean, it said, if you love music and you love podcasting, this is the job for you, basically. So I immediately, you know, was like talking to my family and stuff, putting together like the right email, put it together. And to be quite frank, I never expected to get an answer back. You know, obviously a company with so many subscribers, you would think, oh, they have so many emails, it's never even going to get seen. Then one day I was walking to like the store or something, and it was freezing cold out, like a snowstorm. Of course, Alberta, it's the worst.
Hit hard.
And I'm looking at my phone and I see an email from Frank through the winter friggin' cold. And I remember I was like having a little celebration there in this parking lot in the friggin' minus 30 because I got an email from WatchMojo. So yeah, we just kept going from there. And similar to what Joe's experience was, I got on a call with these two and then with our CEO, Ash. And then again, within 5-10 minutes, we're talking Van Halen, we're talking Def Leppard. So I obviously felt comfortable right off the top.
Sorry, I was just going to say, from the get-go, we told Cassius, it's not like you're being hired for this. This is like you're part of the podcast, you know, like it's your ideas, my ideas, Frank's ideas. So much so that like the theme music, you know, Frank found the theme music and I keep getting compliments nonstop. Dude, I love that theme music. I love that theme. I'm like, yeah, great, you know, like... So anyways, it was just like a really team effort, you know?
It's better that than, hey, get rid of that.
Yeah, exactly.
That
music, Jesus.
This is true.
Yeah.
All of this, which caught me off guard too, because again, such a big company, you have these negative assumptions about a big company, like, oh, they're just going to write you a script and they're just going to give it to you and you probably won't even meet the people who are higher up. And it was such a pleasant surprise, because that is often the case, as I think Joe was going
to
say.
Yeah, not to gush even more about WatchMojo, but, like, you know, I've been through a few, not ran a radio station, but I was head of production of radio for like 10 years and stuff. And, you know, when you see someone say something online or say something in an email, you know, your boss tells you something and then you're always like, yeah, whatever, you know, we'll see if, you know, if the proof's in the pudding. But, like, I've been living it through the pandemic and through when SoundMojo started, and I've seen that, like, what they say, they do, you know, and I'm super appreciative of that, you know. So it's like, it's fun to be a part of this team, you know, very collaborative.
It sounds amazing. Cassius, did you have any experience podcasting before jumping into the Inner Sleep?
Yeah, I honestly have been podcasting since I was like 10 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, I started really young. Yeah.
So just about two years.
Yeah. Hey, I'm 10 and a half. No. But I just started doing it and I've been doing it ever since. And it's always been, honestly, I find all those years were really working up to something like this. Like, if you could have told me a dream job, I couldn't have even said it would be, as good as this. Because think about it, when you're in school, and even when you're doing your dream jobs in school, no one would think maybe you could find a super cool YouTube channel and make awesome content that you'd really enjoy. They just tell you, oh, you can go be a firefighter or whatever. So yeah, incredibly grateful for sure.
Very, very interesting. What would be some of the biggest challenges when it comes to running this podcast? What would be some of the things that makes it less fun?
Views. I was just dropping that silent, drop and just let me do it. Challenges is I want to do like you, three a week, two a week. We have we're sitting on a few, you know, we're like trying to organize things, and it's like I want to pump out a lot more content, because, like, I mean, SoundMojo has so many different things. Like, we had so many, I still have them, so many ideas of stuff we want to do. It's just like time, right? It's just always a matter of time. You know, we want to talk about, like, documentaries, biopics. We did one this summer, you know, and cover events as well. Maybe some live streams or, like, you know, actually put on. One of the ideas we had was with Ash and, Heavy MTL, which is, like, to have a side stage of, like, you know, SoundMojo artists or local artists, where it's like, here's a SoundMojo stage and, like, maybe have some WatchMojo people there also, you know, hey, people recognize, oh, yeah, I know you guys, you know, this and that. So it's, like, sort of, like, get WatchMojo into the community even more. Yeah,
very, very cool. So I always love asking this question whenever I'm with a fellow podcasters, is has there been an episode, an interview that you would love to redo because it got away from you?
Well, I know that Cassius handles a lot more of the interviews than we do. We sit on a few, but we leave him as the main on-screen talent. Cassius, I mean, do you have any in mind?
You know, I think I've been pretty lucky with these ones. The only time that sometimes I wish I could have done it better is if it's like super, super early in the morning or super, super late at night. Those are the only times where it's like it when I watch it back, it's very challenging for it to be as good as a regular time, because the people who usually do 6 a.m. radio or whatever are doing it every day. That's the only times where I sort of kick myself, like, oh, I wish my face was moving at that point. I didn't look half dead.
I have one regret of Inner Sleeve, because I haven't done that many podcasts. But Inner Sleeve was that I didn't participate when Daniel Lanois was on. You know what I mean? Like, because, like, as being a huge fan of Daniel Lanois, and then he called Cash's brother. Little brother. And I'm like,
little brother.
Oh, my God. This is like, this guy produced some U2s and, like, some of the greatest, like, recordings, Peter Gabriel. I mean, he's like, come on, man. And he called him little brother. I'm like, come on.
He's like, I'm the Lanois fan around here. I am the fan.
Honestly, like, I think for us as a small team of three guys, I mean, I think I'm pretty proud of the names that we've got on the show. Like, you know, like you mentioned, Daniel Lanois, even surprisingly enough, one, like, a fan favorite, Chris Holmes.
Yeah, man, that was hilarious.
I'm blanking, obviously. Steve Stevens was great. I'm blanking. Guar was awesome. Me out here. Oh, yeah, Guar was hilarious. Oh, my God.
Did you break through with Guar, or did they stay in character the whole time?
Man, I tried so hard. I tried playing into their humor. I tried asking them in creative ways. But listen, the one cool part, though, was that I got on the call with them as they were setting up. So the guy had his helmet off and he was like just talking to me in a normal voice.
They were hilarious.
That was a trip for sure. Really weird.
I toured with them, so we knew each other off stage, so I had a little bit of an inner way into them.
So like guts thrown on you type of thing, that intimate with them?
My guitarist's wife, who was handling merch on the tour, was thrown into the crusher grinder under the drum set in Vancouver at the Commodore Ballroom, though. That did happen. But I can still remember the smell of the bar show.
The second person to tell me that it smells you know, when you go to a Gore show.
It doesn't smell bad. It has an interesting smell. It's not like playing with Watain, because that smells like dead creatures. So
it's more of a musk, a guar musk.
I'd rather smell the guar smell than a Watain smell anytime. Speaking of metal, let's talk about metal. Let's talk about, if you're metalheads, extreme metalheads, Vox and Hops is obviously an extreme metal podcast. So talk to me about, you've mentioned a few key names so far throughout the conversation that you are metalheads, but talk to me about if you are metalheads and what metal means to you, if you've ever been in a mosh pit, what is probably the most metal experience you've ever lived through?
I grew up metal, like from the age of 9. I mean, the first album I got, well, it wasn't metal, but it was Motley Crue's Shout of the Devil. Which was like, you know, I was 9 years old. Like, that's what, grade 3, you know? And I'm listening to this, shout. And I was like, wow. And I killed that cassette, like, because it was a cassette back in the day, right? I killed that thing like crazy. And that just was the gateway to everything else, right? I went through all the hair stuff. The screaming Queensryche was like a big influence. And I got into the prog metal. That was like Dream Theater and like all the... the Swedish metal stuff. Like, the heaviest the most extreme I enjoy is Meshuggah, which is about as hard as I'm going to get, you know. But Opeth as well is big, you know, like the older stuff and even the newer stuff. So yeah, metal, I've been around in and around it.
I'm sure we've been to the same shows, it sounds like.
You guys probably have, been in Montreal. Yeah, unreal. You know, you're getting me thinking now. You know, the guys that I really look up to are a lot of the classic metal groups. So they're boring vanilla, Answer of Sabbath, of Slayer, of Dio.
Well, Slayer's never
which
boring.
Is not, I guess, not boring for a metal
never
head.
Never boring.
Yeah, definitely not.
Dio rules.
And probably the most metal experience. Yeah, the most metal experience I've had, probably shooting some of these concerts. I remember at the Slayer concert, I was taking pictures and they dropped their curtain, and then the guys, you know how the guys carry the curtain away, all the roadies. So their curtain caught my camera case and ripped it off my neck. So then I see it going, there's stuff in the curtain away, and I'm trying to tell these guys, you guys have my camera case in the curtain, and they're like, what are you talking about?
Fuck off.
So yeah,
like
just
trying to get backstage. You're not talking to Tom.
Yeah, they're like, we're Slayer's roadies. We don't care. So yeah, it was hilarious, man. Some crazy times in those pits too. Crazy.
How are you, Frank?
I hate to break it to you, Matt, not the biggest metalhead. There's actually a joke, inside joke running, that like Frank doesn't know all that much about
youngin,
period. But yeah, I'm very much like a novice, but like to the point where there's so many subgenres, like I get so confused all the time, so I don't even know what metal is.
Metal's
like
an attitude.
Yeah, exactly.
I
was gonna ask you that. I actually had that as a question, but not like, you know, I grew up with all the metal prog rock prog, all that stuff, right? Extreme metal, technical death metal. It's like, why do we feel this need to really niche down into everything? What do you think about that?
I think it's a precious little treasure that they want to keep to themselves.
True.
So to have it,
like they're the kings of this subgenre.
Everything is like classified, and it's like the uber nerdism that goes into being a music enthusiast. So something that is yours, something that belongs to you, then you discover other people that also enjoy that. It becomes like your own little crew of people that love this similar thing. It's a culture thing. So I think it's super interesting. But the older I get, it's always just music is music, metal is metal. It's a huge umbrella, you know, that covers so many things. And it's because metal is an attitude.
So I've got a question for you then, because when you said metal, I know that Joe Cassius and yourself, you kind of lean towards like Sabbath, Slayer.
Well, yeah.
Was Maiden mentioned as
For me, at least.
Okay, well.
Yeah, not yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Will I mention them? I don't know. Will I mention them? No, but when, like, a bit more modern name that came to mind, and you tell me if this is true metal or not, but like Breaking Benjamin, 3 Days Grace, like are those metal, or what kind of category?
I think they're more in the hard rock segment. I have a funny story about 3 Days Grace that I'll tell you right now. I was in a band called 3 Mile Scream before I was in Cryptopsy. And we had applied to play the Mudvayne gig when they were touring. What was that CD? Not Falling. They
played I saw that show. I was there.
And with the Strobes, it was insane. Oh. And the agent calls, or my bassist at the time, Mike Marino, calls. And he hears or sees an email, and the guy didn't really know who was opening for them. And he says, oh, I don't know, it's 3-something. So he's like, oh, shit, we got the Mudvayne gig. We got the Mudvayne gig. And he tells all of us, and we're all super excited. And then he gets another message from the dude, and he's like, oh, no, it's 3 Days Grace. And that's the first time I had ever heard about 3 Days Grace. So I didn't know who they were,
and I saw them open up. Next thing you know, they're on radio everywhere. I'm like, well, where does this band come from?
Huge.
Where does this band come from? Like, I didn't know them yesterday, and the next, like, really the next week, because I obviously went for Mudvayne, but like, they were okay, you know, I guess, you know, nothing wrong there.
I had a bit of a crutch.
Yeah, for sure. Rightly so, I get it.
Yes.
A 3 days long crutch.
Let's talk about Montreal. Cassius, I don't know if you've ever visited here, but I am curious about your experience with Montreal, everyone. Why there is such a vibrant music scene. I have my answer for this because I get asked this question very frequently when I'm on tour. But why do you think there is so many artistic things coming out of Montreal? Amazing things, you know, having Sound Mojo start a label, and there's probably a bunch of artists from Montreal on the label. Talk to me about Montreal music and why that is.
I don't know why it is. I just know I've always known Montreal, being born and raised here, and being a part of the scene as well as a guitar player in metal, prog metal bands, and doing shows all over the town. But I don't know, but like, it's true, you know, I've always noticed, like, and it's like not only in one discipline, right? We're known in every discipline. You have from EDM to like metal to rock to like indie stuff. So it's, I don't know why, man. It's not something I could put my finger on, but
it's not a cookie cutter town, though. You know, it's a metropolis, so with that comes diversity, and there's just so much out there. And I know you're talking just from general arts standpoint, right? Not necessarily.
Yes. Typically, I would focus in on the metal part of it, but it really spans into all aspects of art.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Like, it's a tough question to really nail. But I think it's just like a super liberal city that has an audience for everything. And a lot of things are born here. And, you know, then people move on and maybe head to other meccas for whatever industry they're in. But a lot of it, like I know, like random, like when you were saying the arts, like the random thought unrelated to music, that my girlfriend and I watch a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race, right? And there's a huge drag race scene in Montreal. Like a lot of the big names in that industry who make it big to New York and to wherever, like they've started here. Yeah. Like there's drag shows here. Like it's quite remarkable. And that just goes to, it piggybacks on what you said, like just extremely diverse in many different fields. So yeah, we're lucky for it.
Like even
it keeps us,
even comedy, right? Like it's huge. Art, like a jazz. Look, we have a jazz fest, man. Like one of the most widely known around the world, right? Cirque Soleil, like it's,
yeah, it is insane how much stuff is there. My best guess as to why that is would be maybe more availability, maybe more/better bars and clubs to play. I know that there's great schools out there. Like I know some of our people at Watch Mojo, especially our CEO, like does stuff with Concordia. So I'm thinking there's more of a crossover between just general living and the arts in Montreal. That's my hypothesis. And to answer your question about visiting, I did visit, but it was on a school trip where I was taped into my hotel room.
Really?
So at the night. At night. So.
Also 2 years ago.
Yeah, also that was 1 year ago.
Hilarious. Now, if you could do the inner sleeve, I love collabs, right? So my brain is always thinking about making new beers. Just this past summer, I released 22 beers for a project called Vox and Hops Brutal North America, where I paired past guests of the podcast, the Vox and Hops alumni, with metal breweries from across North America. 22 of the collabs came out. I love making collabs. So if you could make an inner sleeve beer, what style of beer would it be, and what would you call it?
Definitely would have to have something with Frank Zappa for me. Mm. Some hot rats,
just a big like mustache on the can,
Rat Motel, or like some weird title like that. That's for sure. Maybe Rat Motel would be something cool, or 200 Motels. I think
it sounds delicious.
Yeah, Hot Rats is a great album.
Hot Rats,
yeah. Oh my god, man. I
so
would
can you repeat that?
Go ahead.
Can you repeat that actually? Is it like an inner sleeve?
It'll be your own beer, basically. You would team up with a brewery, and you and the brewer would sit down together, and you would tell them, I want you to make this style of beer, and then you design a label, and you have a name on the label, and it's your beer.
I know, I'd like something with just enough hops. Like, I like hops, but I don't like it when it's overkill, so I'd like something that a lager guy could drink, and a hops guy could drink, personally.
An IPL, an India Pale Lager, maybe.
There you go, mixing up the game.
I have no clue.
What's a Kilkenny style beer?
That's like an Irish cream ale.
That's it. Yeah. So that I would like go something along those lines.
It's really hard to do those in cans because of the widget, the little plastic ball in it that's been patented by Guinness, and I believe they are ran by the same brewery. So they don't let any other breweries release beers with the little widget in it to get that cream foaminess, that
frothy,
exactly, that tap pour.
Wow, I didn't even. I love it. I'm going to bed. It's like you're supposed to learn something new every day. This is it.
You guys both drank like a Family Guy episode.
Wait,
the
why
exact
is everybody
same
talking
time?
About crypto, man? We got to talk about this beer technology, man.
I typically wrap up with one last question. It's a classic Vox and Hobbs wrap up question. It's probably doesn't happen to you guys very often because you're very busy. You seem to be mature and in control of your lives, but every once in a while it happens to everyone. What are your hangover cures?
Never drinking again.
Yeah, I was just saying that, the mantra.
That one doesn't fix anything.
Chicken noodle soup.
You know what? Oh, that's cool. Yeah, something warm. Those heat packs, you know, are always useful, but
more
I think
beer
it's just,
also helps.
No. Yeah. Strangely enough.
It does, actually. But
absolutely hating yourself is a cure to overcoming this. Like, I don't know. I think I've been scarred from the last couple times. Okay, I'll tell you a funny story, actually. Last time I got, like, since that point, I've never gotten a true hangover, which I'm thankful for. I was in Las Vegas Las Vegas and hangovers. I'm sure people aren't strangers to that. Yeah, but 2018, I want to say. And first of all, we were at this club, and, like, the prices there are just ridiculous. Like, we're talking about
mortgage.
Mortgage for a 1.5 liter bottle. Okay, so we go up to the bartender and we're like, okay, how much is a bottle? Base bottle, nothing. We're not asking for anything special, any type of fancy liquor. 1.5K.
Wow.
USD.
For like for a Smirnoff bottle or something?
For a Smirnoff, exactly, a vodka. 1.5. So we're like, okay, that's out of the question. How much, maybe we can get a bit more bang for our buck. How much is a shot?
$85. Oh my god!
So
run amok.
So, anyways, we felt like the most value purchase was $20 Bud Lights, or something like that, like the tall cans, right?
Yep.
And yeah, it's pretty wild. And I had like two or three knocked out. I felt like I like got. Something was slipped in there. I couldn't believe that two or three, and it was bad. Like, I had the whole night, it just hit me like a rock, and I couldn't believe it. But honestly, a hot shower.
That does help a little bit. Yeah.
If you're asking for remedies, like, maybe not completely cure it, but it'll at least help for maybe 45 minutes.
You need a sauna. That's what you need at the hotel.
Yeah, that's true.
Sweat it all out.
That would be good. Yeah, how about you, though, Matt?
I suffer in silence. I am a father of two young children, so it's not their fault. They're not the ones that drank the beers. If I could, and if I have it in the fridge, I'll drink a fruited sour, which is a sour-based beer. Is like a kettle sour, which is like a very tart, typically 5 to 7% base beer, and then they pump it with a bunch of fruit puree. So it's like a smoothie, super thick, a little bit tart. So you're getting your fruit and you're getting a little bit of booze. And then I drink a cup of coffee with it. And I was talking to the boys from Pub Brewski here in Montreal about my hangover cure. When I asked them, they turned the table on me. And then they were like, that sounds like a good idea. And then we made Brutal Juice, which is one of my beer collabs that came out. It was I think it was 8.5% coffee. It was Zab coffee that was in it. It was really, really delicious with dark, dark berries. It was looked like blood. It was amazing. Yeah.
Awesome.
Wow, man. That's some heavy stuff. That's the closest I've gone to going on a diet, drinking a smoothie like that. That's 8%. Usually fail.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaking microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick, and usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work, but we talk about decidedly not-so-grown-up things like...
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics... all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers, think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.
Yeah, actually, well, I was just curious to know, like, how like the why Vox and Hops. How, obviously, now that I know you're a huge beer fan, but like, how did you guys get that going?
I was home for a year. I took a year off to stay home with my then 18-month-year-old daughter. My wife went back to work. I stayed home for a year, being in Montreal, and we do not watch much screens with my children. In the winter months, it gets dark really early here. I got like really bored fast in the afternoons because it was like many hours before my wife would come home. So I started listening to podcasts. I had been a guest on the Jasta show, which is like a huge podcast ran by Jamie Jasta of Hatebreed. So I started listening to that one first because I knew it, and I just got addicted to the format. I moved on to the X-Men with Doc Coyle. He was in God Forbid. I played with God Forbid. Now he's in Bad Wolves. Listened to a lot of his stuff. Started listening to Off Camera with Sam Jones, and I just really enjoyed his interview technique because he actually listens versus speaking and monologuing the whole time, which a lot of podcasters tend to do. And I just fell in love with the format. I went to dinner with my wife, who is now the producer of the podcast. Shout out to Jessica. She is really the person that always takes my ideas and then makes them better. So that night, the name was born, the concept was born. I was going to sit down with my friends. It was supposed to just be singers and talk about their you know, vocals and performing vocals and drinking a craft beer. It was basically like, you know, comedians in cars getting coffee, except it was musicians in bars drinking craft beer. It was really my elevator pitch before I had an elevator pitch for Vox and Hops. And then I very, very quickly realized that just doing vocalist really would constrain me to the amount of guests that I can get. So I immediately, my first guest was actually a guitarist. And one of my closest friends, Danny Marino from The Agonist, known him for ever. So it was an easy conversation. I was super nervous when I was sitting down to record that first interview. I was at his house and he looked at me and he went, "Dude, you've played Vakken. It's like, you can do this."
That's awesome.
I was like, okay, you're right. So then we recorded and it went well, and I recorded 10 interviews. and I started releasing episodes in October 2018, and I'm just about to release my 300th episode coming up in the next few days. So 300 episodes in just about 3 years. It's been running good. It's a passion project. I really, really enjoy having conversations with people. The first 100 episodes were just my friends. And then eventually publicists got wind of what I'm doing, and I basically have to tell them I can't do their interviews anymore because I'm just too booked.
But yep.
That's going to happen.
That's what I'm talking about, man. It's huge. I did want to know from you, because obviously you have a lot of experience, what is the king of craft beers, in your opinion?
Oh, the specific beer? That's difficult. I think the beer that changed the most on the scene here in Quebec, I can talk about that, because I can't really talk about the world because I don't really live there. I'm pretty much very well versed in what's happening here in Quebec. The beer that changed a lot for a lot of breweries here was Boreal's Nord-Est from Boreal. When that hazy, milky a beer, basically very much like this one, came onto the market, everyone was freaking out and waiting in line at Boreal. And Boreal is not a microbrewery. They're a microbrewery because they're not owned by Labatt or anything like that, or Molson, but they are still a very big brewery that makes beer that is available everywhere in every bar. When I started playing shows with 3 Mile Scream, when I got my little drink coupons at Sapphire, I don't know if you remember Sapphire, I would cash in my coupons to drink Boreal, and I would, you know, getting used to drinking it. So this beer came out, Boreal's in August, and it's in New England. It was one of the first ones. There was probably two or three at the same time that dropped, but this one was the most, people freaked out. So I still think that if it wasn't for that beer, the hazy craze here in Quebec wouldn't be as advanced as it is now, because basically every brewery is killing it with the haze now.
Interesting, man. I got to get down to Quebec because it sounds like there's a lot of a lot of cool stuff.
I remember I used to work at a dépanneur, as we say here, as a kid, you know, and like beer is just like, it's crazy, man. Hockey and beer, you know?
Hockey and beer.
And music, obviously, because we have so much talent over here. I remember, actually, it's a funny story. I remember working, it was Jerry, on Jerry Street, you know, near the metro. And like, I'd be doing, you know, stocking up the beer, stocking up the fridges. And then right behind me, all of a sudden, it's coming down here, big boots walking, turn around, and it's like, it's Piggy from Voivod. I was like, wow, no dude, way. You're buying beer here. Amazing, you know? So that was a cool little story.
He was amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys are Matt. Specifically, have you been to the Steam Whistle Brewery in Toronto?
I have not, but I know the name well, and it actually, I feel like they have started distributing into Quebec now.
It's kind of got a Saint Ambroise vibe.
Okay.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like nice open resto / obviously you get your beer there and they make it all in house and it's a really good vibe. So I was there this summer. Mm-hmm. Gave it a go and I really enjoyed it. So if ever, I know that wasn't necessarily what we were talking about, stress. But it came to mind that if you're ever in Toronto, I'd recommend going there for sure.
Absolutely. Very, very cool.
Pretty good beer too.
Ontario has a vibrant scene. Very, very vibrant scene. There's like way more breweries in Ontario than Quebec. It's like actually insane.
Well, huge next province, level. Right? It's crazy.
That's true.
The population is bigger. I also want to know, like, going back to music, like, how did you, like, get started in music screaming? Because, like, you must know, obviously, Justin from Fane, the local band Fane.
Yeah.
We had him on the show the other day, and he gave us a tutorial, like a master class on screaming, right, and vocals and stuff like that. And I've always I've always been into, like, the singers, like Dickinson and, like, Halloween. Mm-hmm. I was a huge Halloween fan when I was a kid. But, like, I'd be at like Cité Dormir, like listening, and like you know, these bands next to us going. And I was, you know, at the time we were stupid young kids. We think, oh, well, they're using effects and stuff. But then when you actually sit there and you watch the guy, I was recording in studio, and I'm like, all right, let's get the levels, you know. And this guy's going, I'm like, where are your effects? Like, there's no effects, dude. You know, it's like this guy's, it's his real voice, you know. So I was curious to know, like, how you got started in the whole scene.
I've always wanted to be a singer. I really grew up learning music in my dad's car, listening to Journey. He was like a pure 80s hair metal. Loves it. The Black Album was in constant rotation. Bon Jovi. So I always wanted to be a singer, a clean singer. So I imagined my whole life wanting to step up onto stage and be a singer. And a funny anecdote is that when I was really young, there was a talent show. I'm from Two Mountains, which is outside of Montreal, next to Saint Eustache, and it used to have a very big English population. Now it's more francophone, and that's cool. But I tried out for a talent show, and I was in grade 7. And the song that I chose was Meatloaf, 2 out of 3 Ain't Bad. Now if you know this song and you imagine a 13-year-old child singing the lyrics of it, it's extremely inappropriate. And I kudos to my parents for letting me to do it, but they could have also helped me get into the talent show by letting me choose a song that had a bit more child appropriate lyrics, you know. I want you, I need you, but there ain't no way I'm ever gonna need you, so don't feel bad, because 2 out of 3 ain't bad, or something like that.
The teachers have their eyebrows raised.
Totally. So I didn't get into that, but shout out to Mrs. Cocking, who ran the plays at LTM with my high school that I went to. She was actually one of the judges at that, and she came up and found me and said, you can really sing, you should join the plays, which I did. And then our first play was Oliver, and I was one of the orphan boys, and then I just kept doing bigger and bigger parts until I was in my graduating year, and I got like one of the main leads of the villain and stuff. So that was super fun and formative, and learning to sing with Mr. Schenk in the piano room was really the formative years of me learning how to sing. Mrs. Cocking again, shout out again, there was this band, they were super cool, they were a grade older than me, but the same was horrible, and she was like, you should sing for them. And then about 4 months later, I ended up singing for this band, and that was my first band. Funny story there, we were covering Faith by Limp Bizkit, and I got to the point of the get the fuck up, and the guitarist stopped, and he made me apologize to his mother, who was upstairs.
Should have turned it down like my dad in the car. Unplugged the mic for a second.
So it just continued like that. That band evolved into another band, a very big Tool influence that I was into. Incubus was a big thing. Science.
That
Brandon Voice.
Wow,
voice,
what an album.
Science was amazing. Make Yourself became huge. I continued in that aspect of things. That band fell apart. And then Mike Marino called me up one day and asked me if I wanted to join his band that he was forming called 3 Mile Scream. And then from there, 3 Mile Scream got just heavier and heavier. 3 Mile Scream initially was supposed to be a 7 Dust Taproot inspired band with lots of clean vocals, with just a little bit of harsh stuff going on. At the time, I was obsessed with Mike Patton, and I would listen to just about everything that he did, anything and everything. So I was really pushing my voice to a different limit, doing some more harsh vocals, but not really knowing how to do them, just pushing as hard as I could to try to make sounds, probably not for the best. I was also taking singing lessons at the same time from a woman near my house in Two Mountains, and she wanted to train me to go sing for Cirque du Soleil, and I should have listened to her because I'd probably make more money. But I didn't, and I used all that technique that I learned there and applied it to 3 Mile Scream, applied it to my harsh vocals. Killswitch Engage came out, and that was a huge inspiration, to the point of doing even more harsh vocals. Lamb of God came out, and then Lamb of God, Randy, came to Montreal to produce one of my friend's bands, the singer's vocals, Bloodshot Eye. He actually slept on my guitarist Alex Dellis's couch with his wife for a few days. This is in 2000 and I want to say 2004 or 2005. I can't quite remember. And we hung out, and that was like a huge thing, and he like came up and like jammed with us and sang with us. It was really, really fun and cool, and that just like motivated me so much. We got signed to a Corporate Punishment Records, which was a subsidiary of Universal, and then that band broke up, and I joined Cryptopsy because Chris Donaldson, my guitarist, is a producer, and he likes to show off his mixes to the bandmates. He still does it to this day all the time. He's always trying to improve himself. He's never satisfied, but he loves to show off what he has worked on. And Flo, my drummer, was in a state of fluctuation of wanting to include clean vocals into extreme metal, Cryptopsy, that is. And he liked what he heard, so he hit me up, and he asked me to join the band. And that was in 2007, and I've been there since then. So I definitely wasn't ready to be an extreme vocalist. I jumped into Cryptopsy being totally not prepared, but I've learned over the years how to scream and toured with a bunch of amazing vocalists to get inspired and have conversations with them and to teach myself how to be a better extreme vocalist. So it's a labor of love, just like the podcast. And you got to put the work in. If you don't go put the work in, it's not going to work.
Absolutely. Matt, I got one question for you. I like to do this when I interview people, and Joe and Cassius, you could piggyback on this, but let's keep it under the band's umbrella. When you hear the word underrated, what's the first band that comes to mind?
I'm so obsessed with like certain things right now. Are you talking like the biggest band, like a big band, or like a band right now?
Could be anything.
Well, there's a band right now that I really like, and it's not because I'm on the album, but I am on the album. But I like them.
They're like Cryptopsy.
It's this band from Denmark, and they're called LLNN. They're on Pelagic Records. They just dropped a new record. It's so good. It's like slow, heavy. There's a dude that plays like keys in it, and it's like soundscapes of just your worst nightmares. LLNN, just so damn good. Very unappreciated. A lot of Pelagic Records bands are a little bit unappreciated, and I hope that changes over the years.
Joe, Cassius, do you have one?
So many things I listen to, but like recent, I'm a huge Devin Townsend fan. Like I think he's probably like, I can't, I at my age at this point, I've loved so many bands that it's like I don't have a favorite band, just like I don't have a best friend, everybody's just my friend, right? It's like, yes. You know,
we're not 12 anymore.
That's it. But if I would have to put somebody as like, who's like, do you really idolize them, would be like Devin Townsend, because the whole package for me anyway. And so it just happened to be like, I guess, you know, Spotify figures out who you like and blah blah blah, so I go to Discover, and then it gives me this one called Four Stroke Baron, which I've never heard of.
Okay.
So I press play. I just press play. I didn't know that. At the time, I didn't know that, like, Devin actually produced this album I was listening to, or the song I was listening to. You know, I didn't know at the time. I just had to. When I heard the sound, I was like, damn, what the fuck is this, man? So I started to search for the band. Like, what's going on? And I say, oh, okay. Anyway, they sound like a Typo Negative vocal wise, right? So it's got that, you know, vampiric vibe, you know? Like, yeah, big voice. Out of key a bit, like a Deftones, which I don't like off key vocals, but like some artists, for some reason with me, they get a pass. And like
Chino can do that.
And then it's exactly. And then it's like super heavy Devin Townsend style stuff. So I'm like, wow, this is incredible. So now lately I've been, every time I'm doing like a video gaming session where I'm like racing a car or something, I have this just blasting, and it just keeps me going like in the game, you know? So that's my underrated band, Four Stroke Baron.
I have a great Devin Townsend story. I've opened for him. I was filling in for this band called The Catalyst with Mike Marino. The only time that I could have a conversation with him was in the bathroom. So I didn't. And I've never had a conversation with him since.
Solid decision.
You know, that's
solid decision. I hate when fans do that to me, so I would never do it to another artist.
That's the last show I saw before everything went February 2020.
Yes, with Hacken. Yeah,
exactly. He did two nights. I caught the first night.
Yeah.
And it's like, what freaks me out about this guy is just how he's, it's like an evening at his house, basically.
Yeah.
Right? So you don't know what he's going to do, what he's going to say, and how he's going to, and he just talks to the audience as if it's a conversation. And then like, I wish I had bought both nights, you know, like the next night's going to be completely different, you know? And it's like, it's amazing. So I love the guy.
The streams he did during the pandemic are really good too.
Plus his podcast series. You ever listen to those?
I did. Dude, he put out a podcast album just like that, and then he's number one, immediately number one, and like, all across the globe.
And it's way too much information. At certain points, it's like, but like, dude, this guy's brutally honest, and that's what I love about him. And he's Canadian. He's awesome.
That's awesome. One underrated group I will throw in there, because I was just talking with my friend about this yesterday, Billy Talent. I think pretty criminally underrated. I think most people in America wouldn't know what's up with them. So, yeah, definitely.
Still remember Red Flag, right? Or
what, yeah, exactly, flag? Right?
Oh, man, that was banger. Jeez.
Yeah.
Frank, Joe, Cassius, thank you so much for taking the time hanging out with me, talking about your lives, music, talking about a little bit about craft beer. I really, really appreciated this. I can't wait to hang out in person and to continue this conversation, because it was an absolute blast. Just want to say a massive cheers to you for hanging out with me. Thank you guys so
cheers,
much.
Cheers, man. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, man. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, do I ever love connecting with fellow podcasters. I say it all the time, every crossover episode that I do, I always say this, but it's the truth. I love hanging out with fellow podcasters because nobody understands what goes into putting out consistent podcast episodes week after week more than another podcaster. This one was a special one because I really enjoy what they're doing. I love what Sound Mojo is building. I think it's exciting, and I wish them the absolute best for the future of what's coming up. I'd also encourage you to go check out their version of this episode because, as podcasters do, we all set things up in our own little way and edit things in our own little way. So it's interesting to A-B the two episodes to see how I set it up and how they set it up. I've included the link to their version of this episode in the description of this podcast. Massive cheers to Joe, Frank, and Cassius. Really appreciate you guys taking the time to hang out with me. Everyone go check out the Inner Sleeve podcast. They release a bunch of amazing content, and they are wonderful humans. If you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You could do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week containing all of the details of everything that has happened throughout the past week in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, including all the details for any episodes which I dropped throughout that past week, if I've been a guest on someone else's podcast, as well as any pertinent information for any cool projects I have in the works before I release them to the public, as well as the updated links to any Thirsty Thursday virtual hangs that are coming up, and the links to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, which is curated by my man Jerry Monk, the metal architect himself, and is available on both Apple Music and Spotify. There's just so much going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. I would hate for you to miss a single thing. So please, please do me a favor and sign up to that mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a glorious weekend. I will be back next week with one episode on Tuesday. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.